Hi, this is Chris from PleasureMechanics.com. Welcome to this week's Just the Tip episode of the Speaking of Sex podcast. Each Wednesday, we share a provocative or fascinating excerpt from one of our favorite resources about sex, and then have a short conversation about it. At the end of each episode, we offer you a tip or a challenge for you to explore in your life. If you want deep, penetrating conversation, keep tuning into our Friday episodes. And for thrilling quickies, we bring you Just the Tip each Wednesday. You'll find a link to the book we talk about today at pleasuremechanics.com. Hit the podcast button at the top of every page for a complete podcast archive. When you are ready to master new erotic skills and unleash more pleasure in your life, enroll in one of our erotic mastery courses. Our online multimedia courses cover everything from couples massage to foreplay mastery to erotic spanking and more. You'll find them all at pleasuremechanics.com. Use the code JUSTTHETIP for 20% off the course of your choice. Today I'm going to share a little piece of one of my favorite philosophers about sexuality. Michel Foucault is a French philosopher and considered by many to be the founding voice of queer theory. You know, when I tell people I studied sexuality in college, at Vassar College, there's a lot of jokes about, oh, did you do most of your research in the dorm rooms, and how could you possibly spend 4 years studying sex? And what a lot of people don't realize is the study of sexuality goes way beyond studying sex. It's really about studying sexuality's place in different cultures throughout history, and about using sexuality as a lens to understand a diverse range of issues, and to understand how sexuality intersects sex with things like race and class and gender. We look at how sexuality has been controlled and policed by various power structures within culture. We look at forms of resistance and feminist theory and how our attitudes change about sexuality. How does this change come about? It's really an amazing field of study. I loved every minute of it. And Michel Foucault is one of those writers that came up in class after class, and so I got the opportunity to study his work in depth. And Foucault is one of those writers that most people will never hear about. He's really part of academia and philosophy, but the ideas that Foucault pioneered have permeated our conversations about sexuality, and by understanding a little bit about what Foucault is saying, you can become one of the brainiest people about sex in your friend group. And by listening to this podcast in general, we hope that you're getting a lot of information and different ideas and attitudes about sex, and this is one I'm really excited to share with you. So Foucault wrote about a lot of subjects, including prisons and psychology, and his interest was really in looking at dynamics of power and how different institutions use power and create power. And his last major work was a multi-volume series on the history of sexuality. And the primary objective of these books was to examine the relationships between power and discourse. Discourse means the formal way we talk about a subject and the way that that language creates meaning and action in the world. So, for example, Fox News has a very different discourse about race relations and crime than NPR, and the people who watch Fox News have a very different language than the people who listen to NPR. And if you're in one camp, listening to the other feels like going into a different world, and that's because they have a different discourse, a different set of ideas and words and frameworks in which they understand the world and communicate about the world. And the way they communicate about these things really creates different attitudes and behaviors in their listeners. So that's an example of what discourse can mean. So in this book, he says, the object, in short, is to define the regime of power, knowledge, pleasure that sustains the discourse on human sexuality in our part of the world. And Foucault challenges the idea that sexuality has simply been repressed. You know, we all have this idea that sexuality has been repressed and oppressed over the thousands of years of history we're emerging out of, and if we could simply lift this veil of oppression, everything would be okay again. And he really challenges this idea and creates more complex ideas about how power and sexuality interact in our culture. And he comes up with what he calls the polymorphous techniques of power, which really means that power is not a unilateral thing. It's not the law or the church that is oppressing all of us underlings, but rather power exists in a much more complicated way, and we each occupy a position of power through which we understand the world, and that our personal power is influenced by things like race, class, education, physical appearance, and how we interact with the institutions of medicine and education and the law. And through this exploration of power, it really challenges us to understand that power is not perpetuated top down, but rather through our internalized behaviors and how we treat one another and how we interact with subjects such as sexuality within our own lives and socially. Okay, so if you're still with me here, and I hope you are, we're gonna go on to a quote from The History of Sexuality, the first volume, and in it he's describing one of the principal features of how we traditionally think about the relationship between sex and power. One of these features is what he calls the cycle of prohibition, which describes how the threat of punishment maintains a silence around sexuality. He says that the cycle of prohibition goes something like this. Thou shalt not go near. Thou shalt not touch. Thou shalt not consume. Thou shalt not experience pleasure. Thou shalt not speak. Thou shalt not show thyself. Ultimately, thou shalt not exist except in darkness and secrecy. To deal with sex, power employs nothing more than the law of prohibition. Its objective, that sex renounce itself. Its instrument, the threat of a punishment that is nothing other than the suppression of sex. Renounce yourself or suffer the penalty of being suppressed. Do not appear if you do not want to disappear. Your existence will be maintained only at the cost of your nullification. Power constrains sex only through a taboo that plays on the alternative between two non-existences. Okay, so one of the ways to understand what he's saying here is that culture uses the power of prohibition to limit our sexual expression and dictate what is sexually acceptable. And this shows up in different ways in different culture and throughout time. In our own Western culture, for example, homosexuality was once kept silent by the threat of punishment. So if you were to express your homosexuality and try to live into that identity, you would be silenced, you would be shunned. And through this threat of punishment, we internalize that threat and keep ourselves secret. This, of course, is still going on in a lot of countries where to come out as homosexual or be caught in homosexual behavior comes with the threat of death. We've all seen those images of ISIS throwing homosexuals or suspected homosexuals off of tall buildings in these ceremonious rituals of execution. And so as long as we feel this external threat of punishment, we can internalize that threat and keep ourselves silent, keep our sexualities in the dark, keep them silent and hidden away. And this itself is a form of punishment. And so we can think about this traditional idea of prohibition and how it affects our lives. What are you keeping secret? What are you keeping in the dark because of the threat of external punishment? How are those forces of societal punishment and judgment keeping your life limited? And this applies to sexuality, but it applies to other things too. And when we reflect on this, we can all come up with something that we keep hidden and locked down and shut away so that we do not threaten our own existence within our culture, our social networks, our families, our friends. And this is a big way that shame works. It tells us that if you do something, you will lose love, you will lose social positioning. And how this manifests in our lives changes as culture changes. For many people here in the United States, coming out as gay no longer threatens the loss of life or social position. But for some of us, it does. A lot of people are not out in the workplace. And even this question of being out as homosexual, of claiming that homosexual identity, interacts with this idea of prohibition. But it might also be that you are in a marriage and have threesomes once in a while, but you don't dare tell any of your friends about those threesomes because of the fear of judgment and the fear of losing their respect. Or maybe you're a man who enjoys wearing women's panties, but the idea of sharing that detail about yourself, even with your wife or with your best friend, is super scary because it has this external threat of punishment that you then internalize and therefore censor yourself. So that's the most basic understanding of the cycle of prohibition. But Foucault challenges us to remember that the cycle of prohibition doesn't come from on high. It's not the law or the church that perpetuates this cycle. It's a more diffuse web of power that each of us participate in every day. We all occupy a position of power in our culture, which shifts all the time given what social dimension we're interacting with. So, for example, you might have a different power status in the workplace than you do in your church congregation or in your family. And our power position is influenced by our race, gender, class, education, physical appearance, and so many other factors. And so what we each need to do to take this to the next level is think about how we are using our own power status when we think about and discuss sexuality, both of our own sexuality and the sexualities of others. What do we prohibit and permit? What do we pass judgment on? What do we try to silence? So, for example, if a very large woman walked into a restaurant wearing skin-tight clothing, what would be your reaction? Would you have shaming thoughts about her? Would you try to use your power to will her to cover herself up? Or would you think about her and celebrate the fact that she is enjoying her body and displaying it with the same confidence that a size 8 woman would display her body? How we react to these different bodies of different people is part of the power language, the discourse of our sexuality. And when we start to think about it, we have all these judgments about people all the time. We all have a different structure of what we think should be prohibited and permitted, and our own position of power in culture can really influence these judgments. And being mindful about how you use that power, how you judge the behaviors of others, and how you participate in the creation of discourse. And so, cycling back to this idea of discourse, discourse is something that's created all the time. It's recreated. It's a dynamic flow. And so how we talk about sexual issues as a culture is constantly being regenerated, and each of us has a voice in that discourse. So if you're sitting at dinner with your friends and someone is slut-shaming someone and calling someone a whore and what a dirty woman that is and how dare she, you can sit there in silence and their contribution to the discourse is going to dominate that conversation, and they've contributed a little bit of energy towards slut-shaming discourse. Or you can interject and use your voice and say something like, well, what makes that so bad? Or she has the right to express herself however she wants, or she's not a slut just because she slept with someone. Like, what are you talking about? By challenging their slut-shaming statement, you are changing the discourse not only of that dinner table, but at culture at large, because all these little micro moments add up, and that's how discourses change when we challenge one another and create a new conversation about a subject. So, my challenge to you is to start thinking about your position of power within our culture, what positions of power do you occupy in different social situations, and how are you contributing to the discourse of sexuality, to the idea of what is prohibited and what is permitted, what is celebrated and what is shamed, and how can you use your voice to create the discourse you want to be a part of, to create the culture you want to be a part of. All right, so you can find a link to Michel Foucault's History of Sexuality at pleasuremechanics.com on this podcast page. Go to the podcast archive and you'll find a complete archive of all of our episodes. And if you dare read The History of Sexuality, please get in touch with me and we'll have a little reading group. Because picking up this book again after so many years, it was my Bible in college, I referred to it all the time, and picking up again to share some of it with you was a really powerful moment for you because it reminded me of the intellectual roots of my interest in sexuality and how much time I spent thinking about these subjects and how I can start bringing little bits and pieces of it to you all so we can have a really educated and informed and interesting conversation about sexuality through these podcasts. So I'd love to hear from you. You can get in touch with me at pleasuremechanics.com and we will see you again on Friday for a full episode of Speaking of Sex. Cheers.